So last time we discussed the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Oshar Yossi Aglili, right? The position that we felt was the more surprising one, the one that was the anti-Pshara, right? Not only did he think that Pshara was a bad idea, he thought it was an Avira, he thought it was bordering on blasphemy, and we came up with an explanation for why he thinks that, right? It's because you're leaving the world of Din, which he equates to the world of halacha, and you're going from there to some alternative source, right? The mind of the judges themselves, right? Like he's just taking that Chazon Ish one step further. The Chazon Ish had said that the problem with going to non-halachic courts is that you're relying on a different system instead of the Torah system. Therefore, you know, it's acceptable when there are no viable judges to have the Arkos Shabasuri, the people who are judging from their own common sense, because at least they're not drawing on a rival legal system. And so Rabbi Elazar seems to be taking it one step further, right? That, well, just like relying on a rival legal system is not using Torah, so too, using Pshara is also not using Torah. We saw the Meshech Chachma, who said that there could be a distinction in this regard between non-Jews and Jews, right? For non-Jews, the preference will be for Pshara, and for Jews, the preference will be for Mishpat. And we saw the Yerushalmi, which basically allowed Rabbi Elazar to kind of have his cake and eat it too, right? That he could, the Pasuk talking about Staka u'Mishpat, Mishpat u'Staka, right? Which is Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha's source for Pshara being a mitzvah in the first place, right? So he quotes the Pasuk by David. David was engaged in Mishpat u'Tzedakah. So Yerushalmi says that, you know, you can kind of co-opt that by saying that, ultimately you're doing tzedakah when you pursue real justice, because this way the person who would have stolen the money and gotten away with part of it, so ultimately it's for their own good to be subject to the full letter of the law. The question now going forward is going to be, right, so how are you going to argue with this approach, right? If you think that Pshara is a rishus, especially if you think that Pshara is a mitzvah. So how are you going to respond to Rabbi Elazar ben Oshar Yossi Aglili? And what exactly does it mean that Pshara is a mitzvah, right? How far are you going to take that? So those are kind of the two questions we've got to deal with. So there are two basic approaches that you could have to the question of how to respond to Rabbi Elazar. One is you kind of recognize the problem, and you admit that there is a clash of values, but you just find some way that Pshara is going to overcome it. So, for example, you could just say, look, right, in Choshen Mishpat, we happen to give the judges, there's tremendous flexibility for a Beis Din in the world of Choshen Mishpat, based on the principle of Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker. So even though, according to the letter of the law, Reuven should be giving, Shimon all that money. Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker gives us a mechanism to just have more flexibility. And therefore, if we want to achieve Shalom, right, and we have the mechanism of Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker, so that allows us to do this. I didn't give it to you, but the Tosas HaRash over here seems to go in that direction. He admits that Hefker is a kind of, could be, that Pshara is a kind of theft, but it's okay because Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker is what allows us to do that. Kind of similarly, right, the Chasdei David that I sent, I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it, but he says that, yeah, right, there's a clash of values here, right? We've got Din on the one hand, we've got Shalom on the other hand. So straight up, right, Rabbi Shimon Karcha's disagreement with Rabbi Elazar, he says, right, that I value, Shalom is the primary value, and Shalom is a Torah value, right? It's not like I'm leaving the Torah for some other source. I've got, pressure and counter-pressure, and on the one hand we value Mishpat, on the other hand we value Shalom. Right, so in the case of the widows and orphans, against the big bank, so right, that's just a great example of how nobody's going to say that it's against Torah value to award the big bank and to crush the widows and orphans. This was the Chasdei David on the Tosefta, Right, the Tosefta kind of just gives you a condensed version of the positions in the Gemara, and then Chassid David goes on about that, and he says that Rabbi Shimon Karcha is all about just simply Shalom being the winning horse.
Is Shalom the mitzvah, which they do, or is Shalom the mitzvah that it is?
Shalom is the mitzvah. So I have two rival mitzvahs, and I have one that's beating out the other, right? Pikuach Nefesh versus, say not that way, but let's just say, for example, Piyuch Nefesh versus Shabbos, right? Shabbos tells me don't do the Malacha, Piyuch Nefesh tells me do the Malacha, Piyuch Nefesh beats Shabbos, right? So to here, I have Din telling me do X, I have Shalom telling me do Y, I gotta do one of the two, so Shalom wins, and that's it.
But what's the mitzvah of Shalom?
This is a mitzvah of Shalom. What mitzvah is in the Taryag? I don't have my Gemara on me offhand, so I don't know. Let me just borrow this 1 second. Thank you. Let me see if he said anything. It's always hard to find it. Tztaka, he says. Mitzvahs Mishpat versus Mitzvahs Tztaka. Okay, that works. So that's kind of just one general school of approaches you could make, right? You could say that, again, either just Hefker Bez and Hefker gives us a cheat code, right? It just gives us an out. It gives us the flexibility where normally we wouldn't have it. Or you could say that, you know, we have a clash, but that's okay, because just one value, one mitzvah is overcoming the other. The other possibility, the one which is kind of appealing, is if you can say that pshara is within the system, right? That when you're working for pshara, you are still within the system of din. The question is going to be, can we see this being proven? So the place to start out, right, is this Ramban. This is one of your top 10 Ramban al HaTorahs, or Ramban's al HaTorah. Right, the Ramban has this conceptual breakthrough, which he has here in a couple other places, about the broader halachic system. Right, you have it here. Pasuk says Vasisa Hayasha Vato Vene Hashem. Right, so you should do the straight and the good, the upright and the good in the eyes of God. So we have the Ramban on that. There's also the Ramban, slightly more famous on Kedoshim Tiyu, right, where the Ramban talks about somebody who, is closely hewing to all the, narrow strictures of the law, but he's doing no more than that, and he's kind of exploiting the norms to get away with egregious behavior, right? And the Ramban coins this famous term that he calls this person the Navel Bershas HaTorah. Right, the person who's acting disgustingly, technically within the bounds of the law as narrowly applied, and that Ramban and Kedoshim says, and check out what I wrote over here on Asisa Yashavatov. And the third place where the Ramban talks about this idea is in Shabbos, on the idea of Shabbason. Right, so the Ramban says, look, you've got 39 malachos, but theoretically you could. Not do any of the malachos, but you could be involved in schlepping stuff around all day, and you could have a totally vachadik day, right? And not engaged in any Shabbos activities, and technically speaking, you would be not in the breach. So that's what the mitzvah of Shabbason comes to include. He thinks that the shvusim are all are mitzvah sasemi de oraisa, right? That that Shabbos demands, besides just not doing the lacha, it demands creating a general aura about the day. And so the third example he has is right here by Asisa Yashavatov. So Rashi says Asisa Yashavatov, and Rashi says, he gives us five words. He says Zop Shar Lifnim Mishur Sadin, right? So this pasuk Rashi tells you, quotes in Midrash, is an imperative to perform pshara, and Rashi equates pshara with lifnim mishura sadin. Right, so that's a great phrase, because we know the phrase very well, but you think about it, what exactly does it mean? Right, lifnim mishura sadin. So you should go beyond the line of the law. Right, so is lifnim mishura sadin within the world of din. Right, it seems like it is, right? You're going beyond the letter of the law, but you're still within the realm of the law itself. And the Ramban basically says this, he says this explicitly, right? He says, look, you know, the Torah cannot, you know, create, an ex- you know, cannot kind of take into account norms for every single scenario. So he says we have a variety of mitzvahs, right? You've got Lashon Hara, right? Don't take revenge, don't bear grudges, you know, various you know, concrete mitzvahs which are all reflecting a certain broader worldview. Right, Mipnei Seva Takum, right, it's clear what's behind Mipnei Seva Takum, you know, so you could, like, say, look, I took out my tape measure and the person was, you know, X, you know, far away from me or whatever, but, you know, I could be, like, an expert in the laws of revenge and I could technically explain how what I'm doing is not fall under the technicalities of revenge. But it's clear that there are broader values running along with these commandments. And therefore he says, Chazar lomar b'derach klal, sheyaseh hatov hayashar b'chol davar, right? So there's kind of like a safety net, you could call it, right? Like a catch-all. Ad sheyikanes b'zeh ha-pshara lefnei mishuras ha-din, right? And the world of pshara is included within this catch-all. And then what's interesting is that the Ramban compares this to the mitzvah of Dina Debar Mitzvah, right? So Dina Debar Mitzvah, you guys know what it is? Yeah, Jeremy, you know what it is?
Next door neighbor laws that they get priority if they want to buy land.
Exactly, right? Everybody, you're always better off, it's like in risk, so you're always better off having contiguous territory. So if you're an entrepreneur farmer, you always want to have contiguous fields. So if somebody wants to sell his land, we have the halacha, and it's a din, right? Dina de bar mitzvah, that the neighbors have first right of acquisition. Now, like, technically there's no reason for this to be true, right? You know, Alpi Din, there's no reason why your neighbor should have any more of a right to purchase than somebody living across town. But the idea is that this is a halacha reflecting the broader principles of Pshara and Lefnim Mishuras HaDin. So what the Ramban is going at is that the world of Pshara is... you know, within the broader halachic system, right, and possibly even within the broader legal system, as evidenced by Dina de Bar Mitzvah. I was reading on the train. If you want to, like, Rav Lichtenstein has an article on this. The title was, what's it again? Does Judaism recognize an ethic independent of halacha? So it's a a nice title, and the answer is basically the answer to that question is an analysis of the Lefnim Mishuras HaDin. What? Does Judaism recognize an ethic independent of halacha? The answer is going to be, right, depends on how you understand the boundaries of halacha, depends on how you understand what exactly the Ramban is getting at, what the concept of Lefnim Mishuras HaDin means, and they actually quote some of the Marmokomos that we're going to have later on. Today. But so that's kind of like your general move. Now the question is just going to be, you know, what does that mean, / can we find more evidence for Pshara actually being within the world of Din? Okay. So now we're going to have to go off the range a little bit. I apologize for going a bit out of order. But we've got these two Yad Ramahs we just have to see, right? These two Yad Ramahs which are talking about defining the term of Pshara. Actually, the first Yad Ramah is, we're not going off the range, the first Yad Ramah is relevant. Because this is the one on Lamed Beis and Lamed Beis, right? So you guys saw the Gemara on Lamed Beis. So the two boats, right? That whole story. But the Gemara has two Pesukim, and it's trying to figure out what goes to what. The two Pesukim were Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof, right, and Tzedek Tishbo Desam Yisacha. So the Gemara has a line where it says, right, one is for Pshara and one is for Din. So the question is, what does that mean? One is for Tzedek, one is for Din. So Rashi says, that it's breaking up the pasuk of tzedek, tzedek, tirdof, right? That you should make your pshara b'tzedek just like you should make your din b'tzedek, which is kind of prerogative, right? If you're going to say that from the exact same pasuk, where one pasuk is telling you that you should approach din and pshara in the same way, then that, you know, seems kind of telling about what the root of pshara is. There are two other interpretations in the Rishonim. One is the Rambam, which I'm not sure how he gets it, but the Rambam thinks that Betzedek Tishva Desamisacha is referring to Pshar. That was the Rambam in Hilchos Ratzeach. The Rambam also thinks that that whole Gemara has nothing to do with our topic here, right? That whole Gemara is a case where normal Pshara is one party is right, one party is wrong, and we're going to work out a compromise, right? Where we're leaving din behind and going to pshara. The case that the Gemara here is dealing with is where I've got two boats and they want to go through the canal, and both have equal rights to the canal, and just one of them, you know, has to go first. It's kind of reminiscent of our Shuda de Daini case, right? Where in that case, it's, you know, one person is maybe right, one person is wrong, I don't know, but the evidence is the exact same, right? There's a perfect tie. So do you think that a case where there's a perfect tie and you work out a pshara, is that comparable to pshara where you're leaving din behind? So the Rambam does not think so, because the Rambam puts that case in Hilchos Ratzeach. But anyway, he says that Petzedek Tishna Misacha is referring to pshara. The Yad Ramah thinks that... he quotes Rashi as one opinion, but the other opinion he gives is that tzedek tzedek terdof refers to pshara, and betzedek tishpot es amisacha refers to din. Now this makes sense, because betzedek tishpot es amisacha, having mishpat in there implies that we are referring to din. And then the Yad Ramah says, why do I have tzedek tzedek? Why do I have a doubling of tzedek by pshara? The answer is because, in a way, pshara is much harder to perform than din. Din is much easier than pshara, right? If you're just doing din, so you look it up on the books. And then you just simply apply what's in the rule book to the case at hand, right? It does not require, he says, lo bai iuna vitzilusa kulihai. It does not require that much analysis and attention. You just give the psak, right? And you don't worry about your consequences. So it's easier in two senses. It's easier, one, because you're just applying the rules, and it's also easier because you don't have to worry about the fallout, the ramifications of your psak. You just, you know, tell them the law, and then you move on with the rest of your day. As opposed to pshara, since pshara is more difficult, both in the sense of figuring out who should get more, who should get less, and in the sense of, right, being aware of the ramifications of your decision. So therefore, it requires a much more serious analysis than din does. So I thought that this Yad Ramah, even though he's giving a different interpretation from Rashi, I thought this still reflected the same basic concept, right? In other words, and I'll prove it to you from the next Yad Ramah. If you thought that pshara only meant, let's say, hafker bez and hafker, then you would be under much less pressure, right? The fact that he's saying we have to take it so seriously, that pshara must be taken more seriously than din, seems to be telling you that we're, you know, trying to get at some form of justice, and it's just a much more complicated way to pull it off. The next Yad Ramah, so he there is giving you his linguistic analysis, right? The Gemara uses this word bitsua for pshara. So what does the word bitsua mean? And he notes, right, that if you read the Gemara carefully, so some Tanaim are using the word betza, and some Tanaim are using the word pshara. So you remember the first explanation that he gave for why that is? Well, how does he translate betza? This is the one on Vav, the beginning. Just need like two lines. Yes, right before that. Amai Karle Bitsua. Why does a mayor call Shalokidin? Right? Vidami Le Gazel. Right? You're Reuven should get all the money. You're taking some from him. So that's similar to theft, and therefore a mayor doesn't call it pshara, he calls it bitzua. Let's remember, right? What was the pasuk that Rabbi Elazar ben Ashi Yosi Aglili used, right? Botseya beirich nietz Hashem, right? So besa should be used pejoratively. You find a bunch of cases where it refers to ill-gotten gains. And therefore, right, those who are opposed to Pshara call it Bitsua. That's the first position that the Adonai represents. And therefore you're gonna need three judges, right? If you want to do something Shalokidin, so Rabbi Meir, who thinks that you need three judges, he's gonna say, look, you need three judges because you're doing something which is antithetical to the law. And one judge can't do something antithetical to the law. That's shot number one that he gives, and the Rabbanan disagree. Right? The Rabbanan say no, right? You could do it. The second explanation that he gives is that bitsua is a much more, he calls it machmir. We have to figure out what that means, but bitsua is more machmir, and pshara is more mekel. And he explains, right? Basically, if you we had a machlokas in the Gemara, do we makshinan pshara le din or not? Do we link pshara with din? So that seems like it could be a loaded question, right? Maybe you could argue, well, if I link pshara with din, then that's the exact question we're dealing with, right? Is pshara part of din or not? Are we makshinan pshara le din or are we not? And the Yad Rama might be saying that. Because he says if you're the mayor and you link pshara to din, so then A, you're gonna need three people, and you're gonna have to take the process extremely seriously, right? You're gonna have to figure out. You have to be really machmir, really dedicated and analytical in your approach, and really try to figure out who deserves to get what, right? The explanation he gives for a mayor very closely parallels his own explanation back on Lamed Beis, and in contrast, there are Chacham who say that you only need one judge. Right, so they say, Rabbanan Savri, we do not connect Pshar to Din, and therefore, Eino Tzarech Ledaktek B'davar Kol Kach. You could just split it, right? You don't need to really worry about who's getting their rightful share. So if you're telling me that the position who compares Pshar to Din is also the position that says you need to have three judges, is also the position that says that you need to weigh it out very carefully, very seriously, and in contrast, the other position is saying, one judge, pshara, chill out, you don't need to be medaktik kol kach, just give it a split. So that seems to be more the, let's say, hefker pezden hefker, shalom side of the coin. If all I'm after is I want shalom, so it doesn't matter if he gets 25%, if he gets 30%, right, the parity is that just, both parties walk away happy, and not that both parties walk away with some sort of what we really think that they should get. The Rambam. Let's just skip the Rambam for now, actually, because it's just not going to be solvable for our purposes right now. So let's just go on. The Tshuva of the Rush. Okay, the Tshuva of the Rush. So I made a big mistake because I did not give you enough of the Rush to see. But that's okay. The Rush was huge, so I meant to give you 2%, and I should have given you 3%. But it's a great case. If you're into Jewish history, then it's like a really great case, which I am. So just indulge me for 1 minute, and I'll say what happens in the case. So we're in Spain, and we have two big, it seems like they're really rich and powerful moneylenders, and their names are Rabbi Yisrael and Rabbi Shimon. It seems like the Rabbi is an honorific, because especially Shimon does not seem to be such a frum guy. So they are business partners in a money lending operation to non-Jews, and the Rush says, so basically the queen of I forget which Spanish state he's in, if it's Castile or I think it's Castile, he's in Toledo, and whatever state Toledo is in. So the queen came to me and said, Rabbi, there's this big fight and you stop it. Like, I want you to, you're giving a judgment, this is just too distracting, I have two very powerful people arguing with each other, you figure out a way to resolve the case. So the Rush is under a lot of pressure. So it's a lawsuit, it's Rabbi Yisrael suing Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shimon's wife, whose name is Clara. it seems like Rabbi Yisrael is not married. Because what happened was, so they were business partners of a money laundering operation, and then, as is the wont of the non-Jews, every once in a while, they make a declaration, all debts to Jews are voided, and you must, all Jewish money lenders must hand in their shtaros, so that we can tear them up. Problem is that their business had like lent tons and thousands and thousands of gold dinars to the Goyim, so they didn't want this to happen. So Shimon leaves town with the shtaros of with all the non-Jews. It seems like what happened in the case was that Yisrael had given 12,000 gold dinars to Shimon. Got a star from Shimon saying, I owe you 12,000. And then that money, with his own money, he went and he lent to the non-Jews. So Shimon was kind of Yisrael's middleman. So anyway, Shimon was one who was holding on the non-Jewish staros. So he leaves town. The problem is that Yisrael stayed home, and the non-Jews knew that he was also a big moneylender. So they arrested him and threw him in jail and said, give us your shtaros. And he said, I can't because I don't have any. And eventually he was, eventually after a while, they let him out of prison. So he comes home and he discovers that his house has been burglarized. And all his stuff has been stolen, including the shtar, which says that Shimon owes him 12,000 gold dinars. Meanwhile, Shimon had left town. Once the time of the Gezerah passes, so now Shimon comes back, and now he's collecting all the money from those shtaros that he had saved, and he's making a killing. So Yisrael, and it turns out that that 12,000 dinar shtar that had disappeared from Yisrael's house has mysteriously ended up in Shimon's house. So Shimon says, "Well, yeah, I'm holding on to the shtar because I paid you the money back. So you gave me the shtar." And there's no evidence, and the judges are asking him all these questions, like, "When did you pay back? How could you have paid all that money back? What did you pay back in coin? Did you pay back in commodities?" All these extensive questions they're asking him, and he keeps on saying, "I take the fifth." He takes fifth to everything. The only problem is that there's no Fifth Amendment in Judaism. It is painfully obvious from the story that Shimon is absolutely lying through his teeth, and that he never paid a cent to Yisrael. And it is also clear that he broke into Yisrael's house while he was in jail and stole the shtar. And it seems like he also stole all his other stuff. So the case comes to the Rush, and that's how the Rush gets to his discussion here, because he says, even though I don't have formal evidence, I don't have two Edom telling me, that we saw Shimon break into Reuven's house and steal the shtar. Right? So he says that basically the judge has serious leeway to use his own common sense to come to a decision. Now this is not a case of pshara. Right, he is going to, in the end, convict Shimon and make him pay the full remuneration to Yisrael. But what he says, what I'm doing is, you see this halachic concept in the world of shuda de daini, right? That's one area where we see the judge has personal leeway. And then I was just my bad, because like literally the very next line after what I gave you is he goes on for two paragraphs and he says this is what pshara is all about. Right, Pshar is also about using, the judge using his own common sense to tell you the law. If you, just a slight bailout for me, if you looked at the Sma, which was more convenient because he quoted the Rush in a much more condensed form, and also it's easier to find a Sma than a Rush because it's in the Shulchan Aruch. So that Sma actually did have that last line about the Pshar. It's driving me crazy, because I knew that, you guys asked me this on Wednesday, I knew there was one person who explicitly talked about Shuda Daini and Pshara, and I was like going through the quotes that I had, and I was like, I knew it was someone, and then, it's the Rush, I just didn't give the whole thing. So anyway, so that's the Rush, and just like as we established last time, right, Shuda Daini is in the world of Din, so too it clearly seems to think that Pshara is in the world of Din, and it's about, right, coming to effective, a means of coming to effective justice, right? The most effective justice may not always be the dry letter of the law, right? This is a great example where it's obvious, you know, Shimon is taking the fifth at every step of the way. According to the dry letter of the law, he should get off scot-free. And yet, and it's clear that what's the din, what's the real ultimate din? The ultimate din is that Shimon owns Reuben the money. So so that's just like a great example. And then he just has a nice line in here, right, that what gives the judge the right to do all this, right? What gives the judge all this independence? And he says, right, that this goes back to what we talked about last time, the difference between judgment and, right, the opposite of din being not shalom, not being pshara. The real opposite of din is anarchy, right? And halacha reflected by the concept of kol da'alam gavar, right? May the best man win. So that's why the Rush says at the very end of the quote that I have here, just we'll read from the third to last line, right? Eino rashai limshach yado min hadin. The judge may not remove himself from the case via rivu habali dinin ze imzat, right? And just let the parties duke it out. Uksiv emes umishpat shalom v'chule. That's our pasuk, right? That's our pshara pasuk. And then what does he do with it? Ki al yedei hamishpat yesh shalom ba'olam. Right? The goal of mishpat is to achieve peace in the world. Ulakach nasnu koach ledayan lishpot velasos masha yirtze af blotam v'raya. Therefore, they allow the judge to do what is best in his eyes. Kedei lases shalom ba'olam, because that is really the ultimate purpose of mishpat in the first place. Right? So, it far from saying like the Chasdei David that I've got mishpat on one hand, I've got staka on the other hand. Right? Really. Staka and Mishpat are coming to the same place, right? They're both trying to achieve Shalom. They are just two means of achieving the same end, but you know, they're really all in the same happy family. So that's the Rush. It works very nicely with that Ramban Al Torah. And we've got 20 minutes, so let's go on. Okay, so now we've got just like some halachic nafgamina from Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so question number one, right? So we didn't really talk about this so much, but the question of the Gemar Din, right? At what stage are the judges allowed to, you know, how long are the judges allowed to say that you can do two pshara for? So the position of, what's his name? Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, I think, in the Gemara, who had said that once the judges know where the case is going, they may no longer push for pshara, right? And he quotes that pasuk, like, you know, once the water is running down the slope, you can't stop it or something. But we don't pasuk in that way, right? The Gemara says that he thinks that pshara is a rishus. And it seems from the Gemara that if you think that pshara is a mitzvah, then the judges can push for pshara even once they know what the law really should be. And that is how the Shulchan Aruch paskins, right? And the question is, like, how is that so, right? If you think of pshara as a kind of theft, we know that Reuven owes Shimon the money, so how can we push for a pshara? If Reuven owes $1,000, so why are we going to let Reuven only pay $800? So the Sma has a line, which is, it's just great, because it's like the exact opposite of that Yerushalmi that we had for Rabbi Elazar last time, right? Again, the Yerushalmi had said, you know, Rabbi Elazar really is going to say that I have tzedakah as well, because even though I'm a din person, ultimately it's a tzedakah for him to give up the stolen goods. So what does the Sma say? He says, why is it okay to push for pshara even once the judges know where what direction the case is going? He says, "Ein bazeh mishum mat el chaveiro." You don't have a problem of, you know, tricking the other person. Kinach chaveiro sheyavater ma lebal dino kadesh sheyedvach hashalom beinehem. Right, the other party in the court in the case he's better off, you know, sacrificing 10%, 20% of his gains. Ultimately, he's better off with 80% and shalom than with 100% and no shalom, right? So you know, it's a great case for having our cake and eating it too in the other direction, right? He's No, we are doing what is best for him. We're not messing him. We're not messing him over. If you look at it narrowly, he's not getting all the money he should get, but he's better off with most of the money and shalom than all the money and no shalom. Okay, so that's point number one. Question number two is the Gemara said on the top of Daf Zayin, right? According to the position that Pshara is a mitzvah, so the Gemara clarified, right? And the Gemara said, if you remember, what does it mean exactly that Pshara is a mitzvah? What do we do? This is like the bottom of Vav, top of Zion. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. Remember that? All right, so we just get the Gemara open because it'll be easier to see what they're working off. We're on. I'm getting the Gemara open right now. I'm almost positive it's the bottom of Vav and Beis. Yeah, so the Gemara says first, right, in the second class line of Vav Amud Beis. So Amar Rav Halacha Rishim Ben Karcha, right? So the Psak is like a Rishim Ben Karcha, Pshara is a mitzvah. Gemara objects, Eini Bahar Rav Huna Talmidei de Rav Hava. Rav Huna was Rav's loyal student, which, you know, gives us a shout out to our Smicha Sugya last time, right? According to our version, Tosis's version, that it was Rabba Bar Rav Huna, right, who said, I got Rashus from Rav Huna, who got Rashus from Rav, who got Rashus from Rabichi, etc., etc. Right? So here you have right here, right? Rav Huna was the loyal student of Rav. Ki hava asu the kame de Rav Huna, and when the parties would come to Rav Huna for judgment, Amalahu e dina be'itu, e pshara be'itu. Do you want din or do you want pshara? So, assuming that Rav Huna was loyal to the teachings of Rav, and Rav said that pshara is a mitzvah, so how could Rav Huna tell them, you know, the choice is yours. Do you want the red pill or the blue pill? So the Gemara answers, my mitzvah, nami tik amru shibin karcha, mitzvah, next page, mitzvah lameimra lehu, e dina be'itu, e pshara be'itu. Right, the mitzvah is to ask them, do they want din or do they want pshara? Gemara objects, hainu tainakama, right, who thinks that pshara is only rishus. Tainakama says pshara is an option. So what does it mean pshara is an option? They show up and they say, okay, do you want din or do you want pshara? Right, the choice is yours. But that doesn't mean that pshara is a mitzvah. Pshara is a mitzvah. You should be pushing for pshara. So Gemara answers, ikmenayu mitzvah. Rishu karcha savar mitzvah, tanakama savar rishus. Okay, so you could interpret the Gemara, broadly speaking, one of two different ways. You could interpret the Gemara really narrowly, right? That the Tanakama and Rishu ben Karcha, the disagreement, what does it mean that Rishu ben Karcha thinks that pshar is a mitzvah, that, you know, giving him the choice is a mitzvah? The mitzvah is to give him a choice, right? That doesn't reflect any preference for pshara. The mitzvah is to give them a choice, and that is it. You don't push for one over the other. As opposed to the Tanakama says, you know, you can give a choice, but you don't have to, right? It's like if you go bowling and they always say, you know, like they have to give you the choice of joining a league, otherwise you get a free bowling game. So, right, so the mitzvah is not to push you to join the bowling league. The mitzvah for the cashier is just the boss tells him, you've got to offer the choice, and that's it. So is that all that the Tanakama thinks or not? Does he think that you have to push for pshara? So this is a machlokas ha-poskim, right? You have the drisha right here. So the drisha, as you should know, a couple cool things with the drisha. The drisha, I think his name is Rabbi Yeshua Falk, although I don't know for sure. I'm pretty sure. He writes the prisha and the drisha on the tour. It's a commentary to all of the tour. He writes the sma to Shulchan Aruch Chosh and Mishpat, and apparently he wrote a lot more that we've lost. I think the hakdama to the Drisha on Yoredeya, I don't mention it before, but it's written by his sons, and it's one of the great women's learning marmakomos, because they talk about their mother, the Drisha's wife, and that she was the best Jew ever, and that she paskin nida, and that she said to return at the table, and she learned all the time, and daven all the time, and it's a really cool hakdama. But anyway, What does he say? Yeah, so he says he thinks that there is a mitzvah to push for pshara, right? Like, it's pretty reasonable. What is the Rishu and Karcha doesn't just mean they have the option. Do you give him the option? He thinks that you should push for pshara, right? And that's what it means that it's a mitzvah livtsawa. And the Mishkas Yaakov, who I gave you, says no, right? What does it mean? It means that, he says, paschinan, we open the case by asking, do you want dinner pshara? He makes it sound like in the Haggadah, where we tell the Rasha, not the Rasha, the Einu de Elishal, right? What do we tell the Einu de Elishal? Apsachlo, right? You open them up. So these parties come before you, Mishkas Yaakov says, and like they're lost, they just don't know anything. They've never sued before. They don't know what they're doing here. So you open up for them. You give them their choices. You tell them, do you want pshara or do you want din? But in no way, shape, or form are you supposed to push for one over the other. Okay. Right, so the next question, which is really the one which is much, this is like the golden one, right, is if you think that pshara is operating within the world of din, right, that it's not just it's not rivaling din, but it's within the world of din. So can you force the parties to accept pshara? We'll get to this a little bit because the next thing we've got to cover is the kinyan question, the whole topic of kinyan. That'll be the next thing we do. But can a Bezdin force one of the parties to accept pshara, right? If you've got the, Goldman Sachs against the widows and orphans, so does the Bezdin have the ability to force them to compromise? Or can they only compromise in the event that both parties are willing to do so? So what's the halacha? The Ramah says no, however. Yishcholken, right? It's a machlokas between the Rush and the Mordechai. It seems like the Ramah is paskening no, but there are two positions on the case. Now, you could say that pshara is within the world of din, but you still can't force pshara, right? But if you think that you can force a pshara, then you're certainly saying that pshara is a type of din. So, Rejev, exactly as you said, the Ramah paskens like the first position. But, right, if you look at the Pesachei Tshuva, there's a whole big discussion about this, right? He says, if you look at the Bach wants the Paskin like the people who say that you can force them to go lifnim mishiras adin, and it might depend on the circumstances, right? Particularly the Bach wants to force you to do pshara if the party is wealthy, right? That if you've got Goldman Sachs, then you can force pshara. If you've got two regular civilians, then maybe you can. Right? And then he quotes the Tumim, who's like very... The Tumim, who's Rav Yonason Eibeshitz, he's very uncomfortable with this, and he says, no way. There's no way. Nobody really thinks that you could force people to go lefnim mishiras adin. That's like unconscionable, right? Lefnim mishiras adin is not din, says the Tumim. Therefore, there's no way that you could possibly force it. And when there's a machlokas about forcing people to accept din, it means, very heavy verbal pressure, right? But, like, we can't put him in chayrim, we can't whip him, no actual direct imposition of force. That's the position of the Tumim. So just again, right, you've got the Ramah quotes two opinions. The Rush says you may not force pshara, the Mordechai says you may force pshara. The Ramah seems to paskin that you may not. The Bach paskins that you may, particularly, especially, maybe only if they are wealthy, which makes sense because then it's like it's a form of justice. If I have two parties and one can really afford no sweat off their back, then it could be a form of justice to make them compromise. And if they don't have the money, then it's injustice to make them compromise. So that's pretty reasonable. The Tumim says, no, there's no way that anybody would possibly, you could force a pshara. That's unconscionable. So clearly he thinks that, or seems to think, I think, that pshara is not in the realm of din. Then if you saw the Aruch HaShulchan at the summer in this piece, he says, like, no, what do you mean? Everybody, the Tumim, really, there's a machlokas, whether you can verbally push for a pshara? Everybody thinks you could push for a pshara verbally, right? Pushing for a pshara verbally, that's just like getting shalom biolam. And who's anti-shalom, right? Like, nobody's against shalom. If you could get them to agree to a compromise by their own, that's wonderful. That's arnakoyan. We love that. Tumim, how can anybody possibly argue that you wouldn't push for pshara? And in fact, when they have a machlokas about forcing for pshara, that means real hardcore, right? You break out your whip, and you are going to force them to do pshara if the situation seems to call for it. And that seems to be like pshat in the machlokas. So then that kind of gets us to an interesting idea, right? Which is that pshara could be mishpat depending on the situation, right? That if I have two people who are just arguing, you know, over a sum of money, and no one seems to have any better, one is right, one is wrong, but it's shalom. You have a value of shalom by getting them to compromise, but there's no justice beyond the shalom, right? In other words, on a justice level. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. On a justice level, we'd say, like, ethically, that there's a difference between a case where Reuven and Shimon are arguing over a loan, we could force Reuven to give all the money, and they'll fight forever, but, you know, he could afford to pay the money, he could afford to not pay the money. The only ramification is going to be that their personal relationship has been destroyed. And the case of the widows and orphans, right, where, right, like, you know, Tiny Tim and his life is going to be ruined if we go by the letter of the law, right? In the situation of the widows and orphans, you could say that real justice is to help the widow and orphan, as opposed to the case of, you know, just regular Reuven and Shimon. Justice is that he should pay the money. Shalom is that it would be nice if they didn't hate each other forever. We say that pshara is within the world of din in the first case, but not in the world of din in the second case. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? So that seems to be what the position of the Bach. So that's one way you could say that pshara being in the world of din depends on your situation. The second way you could say that pshara depends on your situation is the nitziv in the Hamak Davar on Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof, where he's analyzing that Gemara on Lama Beis. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, because I sent it to you late, and I sent you so many sources. But the Nitziv there says, let's take time out 1 second. The Gemara asked, Ketzad on Lama Beis, said, how do we force a pshar, right? Ketzad kofin al hapshar. And the Nitziv asks, and then they gave that answer, right? You've got the boats, right? And if one boat is loaded, the other boat is empty, so the loaded boat goes first. And if the two boats are equal, then one pays the other and they go through. So the Nitziv asks, right, if you read the Gemara that way, then, like, what on earth is the Gemara's question? What do you mean, how do you do pshara? Like, in kindergarten, you watch Barney and they talk about compromise, right, taking turns, and this is not rocket science. Why is the Gemara asking, how do you do a pshara? So his answer is that, no, what the Gemara is really saying is that how do we force pshara, right? Ketzad kofin apshara. And he says that if you have a situation like the Gemara on Lama Beis, which is one where no party has a right over the other one, in a case where it is a tie, right? No, I don't have a better right to the canal than you. So there, right, we're going to force a pshara. One boat is heavy loaded down with stuff. One is not. So we're going to force the boat which is empty to stand aside and let the other boat go through. That is a pshara, which is being forced by us. And in the case where they're both heavily loaded, so I'll say, okay, you're going to go first. You're going to compensate for the other boat going first. And that is kofen apshara, which is a form of din, in the case where nobody has a superior right to than the other one. Two more cases where you could say that, you know, depending on the scenario, pshara is a form of din. So one seems to be, and I can't believe I forgot to give this to you, but there is a Riaz quoted by the Shilte Giborim, who says, how long do you have to push for pshara? So he says, once the parties have accepted you as a judge, right, and they've accepted Pshara as a viable option, so there are two steps. Once they've accepted you and they've said that Pshara could happen, so you may force Pshara until the Gemar Din. And after the Gemar Din, where you've said Reuven is Chayev to Shimon, so you may not force the Pshara anymore, but you may push Reuven verbally and say, you know, it'd be really nice if you compromised. Because he says, like, that's Shalom Biolom, and who's against Shalom Biolom, right? There are some people who think that after the Gemar Din, you can't do anything. The Riaz says, what are you talking about? Like, after the Gemar Din, all you're doing is Shalom. So if the Riaz is saying, after the Gemar Din, all you're doing is Shalom, what's the big deal? So what does that imply about before the Gemar Din? Yeah, more than that, right? Before the Gemar Din, once they've accepted you, you can force the Pshara. After the Gemar Din, when you paskind, so you can push for Shalom, but you can't force anything. So the Riaz seems to think that in the event that the judges that the parties accept you, your judgment, and they accept Pshara as a viable option, even if they don't necessarily know like what that's going to entail, right? They decide like, yeah, okay, you know, we'll sign on the waiver that, you know, Pshara could be the result of this case. Well, now that empowers you as a judge, and you can force the Pshara, and they'll say like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that to happen. Like, you know, I was expecting to win all the money, or like 95% of the money, and then you're only giving me 75% of the money. So that's case number, that's scenario number three. Scenario number four comes from the Rambam in the Hakdama to the Parashat Mishnayos. We've got to run, so we can't go to it all inside. But the Rambam there says that Pshara, you know, definitely you can force Pshara in a situation where you don't have any evidence, right? If you don't know if you can't resolve a case, if it's impossible to resolve a case, not because of like the rushes scenario where, you know, everyone has equal rights, but you just can't, with the evidence you have, you can't get to the bottom of things, then that is Pshara, which is a form of din, which seems to nicely parallel that tshuva of the rush, right, with our good friends Yisrael and Shimon. So those are the four. Those are right. Even if you don't say generally a Pshara's din, it makes a lot of sense to stay in those four scenarios: one, the wealthy person, the Bach; two, the Netziv, where, you know, the equal rights; three, the Riaz, where they accept Pshara as a possible option; four, where you can't get to the bottom of things. Just the last point, right, which is just like a purely on a purely technical level. If you thought that Pshara was just like that, what the Yad Ramah had given as the explanation for the Chachamim, that Pshara just means, you know, the Chacham, like, you know, you split it one way, the other way, who really cares? You know, we just want to compromise. All we want is Shalom, so just do whatever you want, and it's all going to be good. So you would think that there are no limitations theoretically in what the judge could do, right? If you think that Pshara is a form of din, then it is reasonable to expect that, you know, you can only push so far, right? If Reuven is supposed to give Shimon $100, then, and we want to say that Pshara is a form of din, it makes sense. You would say, like, well, ad kedei kach, right? You can't, like, make a chuchav et lula out of the din, right? It has to be in the world, in the ballpark, let's say, right? Maybe you don't have to get to the exact target specifically, but your pshara must be in the ballpark of what the din would be, and that is exactly what the Pesachei Tshuva, the last verse gave us. Pesachei Tshuva, quoting the Shvus Yaakov, says, right? That if you want to do a pshara, you have to be karov ledin. It's interesting. He calls the judge the pashran, right? He calls the dayan the pashran. He also quotes, which the Rambam had also, where does pshara come from? It comes from mayim poshrin, right? Water which is not hot and is not cold. It is medium water. And so he says there, he thinks that, I'm not sure what his evidence is. I think he's just, like, it's his own gut, right? Nearly, that you... as long as you're within one third, right? That one third is the leeway that we're going to give you. But you can't do a pshara if you know the person's supposed to get $100, then you can't do a pshara giving, you know, taking more than a third away. That's already leaving the world of din and entering the world of problematic pshara. Okay, so we will stop here, and then I'll send you a source next time for Kenyan. We're going to go back to the last one. Thanks, guys.
When you say that after